When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Path to Power episode 17. I'm Matt Cooper.
And I'm Ivan Yates.
That doesn't sound like the normal Ivan Yates, does it? Ivan is under the weather today. What is this? Was it that you're still partying at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis last weekend or something and you haven't recovered from it?
One word, laryngitis.
Does that mean you're going to restrict yourself to one word answers in a world first for Ivan Yates?
No.
That you're not and you're not going to be interrupting me as I try and put questions to you? Oh, this is brilliant. I'm going to have so much fun today that I'm actually going to be able to make my points and finish them without Ivan interrupting me. And he's still resisting. This is great. Okay, let's start with the first conversation I want us to have is about tax, because I'm fascinated by last weekend's newspapers were absolutely full of tax plans from both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Here we are in April. The budget not until October, the general election whenever, and in advance of European and local elections to which tax packages mean nothing, here are the two government parties out rabbiting on about what they're going to do. And then I started looking at the detail of what they were going to do. And I was thinking, have they learned nothing? Are they incapable of learning anything? Because the last two budgets, we had record spending by the government, 11 billion euro package in 2022, 14 billion euro package in 2023. And of that, 90% went on extra spending, 10% went on tax cuts. And the type of tax cuts they implemented gave them no political bounce whatsoever. So that got me thinking, well, does that mean that they're going to rebalance things and have much more income tax cuts than they will have spending? But we're getting details from Michael McGrath and Micheál Martin as to what's planned. And the rate at which you pay the top rate of tax goes from 42,000 to 44,000, an increase of 2,000 like it did the last time. And it'll mean that people are going to be 1,200 euro a year better off, whereas the last budget was 800 euro a year better off. There's no headline grabber. There's nothing to make people want to rush out. And I'll give you another one. I'm loving this that Ivan is still sitting here silently. But yes, maybe 1,200 euro a year is a lot better than 800 euro a year. It's 23 euro a week. Everyone would feel that, wouldn't they? But the 450 euro electricity credit will probably be removed, which is your extra 400 euro. Why do they think they're going to get an income tax poll benefit?
Well, I think what's emerging from the Fianna Fáil Ardéis is the skeleton of a clear plan by Fianna Fáil. And a couple of people contacted me on Monday to say, and most of this will be coming from Michael McGrath, and the bones of it look like this. One, the detail of the budget. The budget is set for the 8th of October. Maybe that can be done a little bit earlier. But the idea would be that they'd fast forward aspects of the finance bill and the social welfare bill, and the Dáil would be effectively dissolved sometime around the 22nd of October, with a view of the polling day on Friday, the 8th of November. I don't think it can actually be done any quicker if you take the decision that you have to have a social welfare bill and finance act passed.
Sorry, could I stop you for one second to save your voice? There is no chance that the election will take place on February, November the 8th. Or if it does take place on February, November the 8th. Friday, November the 8th. There is no chance of that happening. And if they do go ahead with Friday, November the 8th, it shows how completely out of touch they are with the realities of what people are interested in.
Well, the other date I heard mentioned was the 1st of November.
Well, it would have to, because I tell you why the 8th is a complete no-no.
Okay.
Right? Can't happen. This, you're going to laugh at me in this, but Ireland play New Zealand at 10 past 8 that Friday night in the Aviva Stadium. There will be 50,000 people in the ground, and that's fair enough. There will be over 1 million people watching on television. Many of those rugby fans are people who are more likely to vote for government parties than they are for people who put for-profit and Sinn Féin. And you know the way people are, that they say they intend to go out and vote in the morning. They don't. They get up too late. They go to work. Evening time voting is where the bulk of voting is done. And people might say, I'll nip into the polling booth on the way home to watch the match. And then they get stuck in traffic or they decide to go for a beer. You could lose tens of thousands of potential voters. So
you could go for the Thursday.
You could go for the Thursday, right? 2 days after the American election as well, there'd be an awful lot of publicity about elections at the time. I still think there's another reason why it won't be that. And I just keep coming back to it. Unless it's Fianna Fáil who decide the date of the election. Unless
that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
that's
that they pull the plug. That Simon Harris has committed to, apparently at the urging of Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan, to go all the way to March. And he's thinking to himself, that gives me 11 months to be Taoiseach. I might never get another chance again. He is not going to want to go for an October or November election. But it could be that the canny people in Fianna Fáil decide, we'll pull the plug and tell him, the young fella, when the election
is. Well, put it like this. I was told, other than the budget, you know, the Dáil may sit later into the summer, but everyone is looking at their own arrangements. It's the lifeboat's time after that, other than the budget. That's the only collective, that they are going their separate ways. And let's be clear about this, that this is good for Fianna Fáil, in my opinion, because at least they have a strategy. They just can't be, you know, depending on Harris. And I think that also it's starting to emerge that McGrath is definitely not interested in Europe. He's definitely hunkering down to be a leader in waiting, which Simon Harris was. And he's on manoeuvres, as you said, in that regard.
Indeed. I think this is actually very interesting. Michael McGrath, I met him last Friday. He came into the Last Word studio and did an interview in advance of the Ardesh. And we spoke about various things. But on the way out of the studio, I threw to him, so is the budget definitely going to be October 7th? And he said, well, that's the plan for the moment. And I went, oh, for the moment, is it? Does that mean it's going to change? And he just started laughing at me. You're not drawing me into that one. But it did strike me that it could be, we've had budgets move forward previously, that to get an election maybe into October, that they might decide to bring the budget forward into September. Mm. And certainly they're already, he put so much detail out about the TAC package. The other part of the TAC, and I want to come back and talk about Michael McGrath and his own personal manoeuvres in a moment, because I do think it is very interesting. But the other point on the TAC, which is very interesting, is that the old USC has come up again, the Universal Social Charge. And last year in the budget, I just went back and had a look at the figures again in relation to this. The government said it gave back 400 million euro in USC to people by reducing the rate, and when people go in at 26,750, from 4.5% to 4%, and that runs up to 70,000 income, and then you go to 8% over that, and if you're self-employed over 100,000, you get the surcharge of an extra 3%. So I don't think that many people probably noticed just the impact of the USC, that if they're going to do something on the USC, it has to be far more dramatic than simply trimming it again like they did in the last budget. But it also leaves Fine Gael with a problem. Fine Gael campaigned in the 2016 general election under the headline, scrap the USC, keep the recovery going. And there's a famous photograph, which Leo Varadkar was reminded of a number of times, of him standing beside Michael Noonan, carrying placards to that effect. But you know who else is in the photograph? Simon Harris. So Simon Harris was junior minister at the time to Michael Noonan, and they went into the election in 2016 and they failed in that election miserably. Now, they could say the result of the election showed that people didn't want to scrap the USC. And about a year ago, it was exactly a year ago this week, actually, I remember putting Pascal Donoghue under pressure during a Last Word interview about the USC. And he said it was always meant to be permanent, which was a real surprise to me, given that Fine Gael had been out there looking to scrap it. And given that, yes, it was introduced as an emergency measure, but the emergency is over. When the state is running such massive tax surpluses, how can you continue to justify this increased income tax burden on the public?
Well, the first point is that I don't think, and I've been absolutely as consistent as, I don't think an early New Year election or a spring election is going to happen. And I think that decision has been taken and agreed between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. That's point one. Point two, I actually think that when you look at all the measures, that the personal tax credit would go up to 2,000, that you wouldn't hit the top rate of tax until 44,000, that the USC for those under 20,000 would completely exempt an employee share of payment. You throw in the child benefit going up 10 euro a month, the old age pension going up 12 euro a week. That what they will say is that Fianna Fáil's credo is to target money to those that are less well off. Ergo saying Fine Gael promised a tax rate of 50 grand and therefore the higher earners. And I put it like this, to the extent that any budget gives you a bounce, I don't know. But at least they have a coherent plan to go to, as opposed to being on, you know, bobbing along on every wave.
I have a couple of problems with that. One is that it's still not dramatic enough. That if you're going to make
it's very expensive at the lower.
Well, I know. The USC brings in about 5.5 billion euro a year, and the Department of Finance officials do not want to give it up. And the reason they don't want to give it up is they say, well, you give it up, you might have to reintroduce it if the corporation tax receipts collapse in the future and all of these surpluses turn into deficits again. So I can understand that. But you know, don't Fianna Fáil want the 50,000 euro a year earners to vote for them? Is there not a thing that, again, come back to, if you go from 40,000 to 42,000 and now in the next budget to 44,000 as the entry point to the top bracket, do you not need to do something far more dramatic to bring yourself up to 50,000 to at least
Can you afford it?
Can you afford politically not to? Are you not just handing power to the opposition by not doing this? And it's interesting as well that I've told that Simon Harris is now starting to criticise Leo Varadkar behind the scenes to people. And he's saying,
you think that's a new development?
No, but he's been more public, shall we? Well, not public, but he's been, he's saying things like that Leo Varadkar's tax policy was incoherent. That's exactly the word that I've heard used, incoherent. And Leo, remember, one stage was talking about a 30% tax rate stepping between the 20% and the 40%. That went nowhere. Even Pascal Donoghue told him to shag off of that one. But he also was talking about the 50,000 magic level. And Simon Harris is now talking about 50,000. But he's talking about a five-year Fine Gael tax plan to bring us to 50,000. 5 years? They've been in power for 13 years. And they talk about, sure, in 5 years, almost inflation in the various rates and whatever and things would bring you up towards the 50,000. They just don't seem to get it, that they need to do something dramatic to capture the public's imagination.
But I'm looking between welfare and tax cuts, something of the order of 4 billion. I mean, I don't know if they can afford a whole lot more. There may be a question about the VAT reduction for the restaurants. They might ameliorate that back to 9. But the bottom line here is this, that I'm beginning to see the beginning of life after Micheál Martin in Fianna Fáil. I'm beginning to see that McGrath can win. I believe that.
He can win the leadership of Fianna Fáil,
yeah.
But can he win a general election?
Well, I mean, like I've consistently told you that, you know, that that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are eating out of the same pie. That is limited, in my view, to around 37% in all circumstances. So if Fianna Fáil go up, Fine Gael go down, it adds up to the same thing. But obviously they're going to, you know, get into the mentality they're going to be more party than government, you know, programme for government and all that kind of thing. But put it like this, this government has to end. You know, there has to be a strategy for this. And this is the first sign that I've seen that Fianna Fáil are starting to address that issue. Interesting, Donnelly wants to go to Europe.
Is that who? Because the feeling is they have to give the position to a senior person.
Yeah, McConnellogue was in the frame.
Yeah.
They
can't let him go on Donegal, though.
Yeah, they might hold that seat. But McConnellogue is quite close to Micheál. But like, put it like, I am seeing some of the signs, like I spoke to you December even, you know, that there was no betting that Harris would be the next leader. And in the same way that Leo was going to be the next leader after Enda. The situation is the heir apparent kind of draws to him or her the leadership status, and then there becomes an internal perceived wisdom. So if you look at it, so one of the things that Micheál might be looking at is he could sort of elevate Jack Chambers to kind of say, well, there's maybe someone else here, you know what I mean? And that's a great way to hold on to the leadership, is to have more than one leader. But I think that...
put Jack Chambers into the Department of Health as a replacement
for minister, full minister, full cabinet minister.
Okay, the interesting thing about Michael McGrath last weekend was that he chose the Ardèche to tell his life story. I thought this was very interesting.
Did he say it on the last word?
No, we were talking about the homelessness of others as it happens. But he then, for those who may have missed it from the Ardèche, I mean, he told the story about how his own father came from West Cork, who would have worked in very, very manual labour and then suffered ill health, and praising his mother for basically keeping the food on the table, but also encouraging a large family of them into education, how he benefited from assistance and scholarships to actually go to UCC. Not an entirely far removed story from Micheál Martin's own story.
Yep.
And I think this Fianna Fáil are trying to emphasise to a certain extent that they are not the posh boys, in the way that Fine Gael has actually been trying to emphasise that Simon Harris comes from a very normal background and didn't benefit from private schooling or whatever.
Like I've said to you that I've done in the past training with Fianna Fáil people, and I asked them questions like, why should we vote for you? And this is sort of stress testing them. And I honestly believe if you cut a Fianna Fáiler, they bleed aspirant working class. They are not middle class. They're not self-employed, but they're very much getting the next generation to university, getting a home of your own, getting out of social housing. And that is their core value, apart from, say, the historical Republican issue. And that is different to Fine Gael. Fine Gael is more a meritocracy. They probably believe you shouldn't get a free house anyway, you know, deep down. So, like, what I'm saying is this, that deeply connects with common members and so on. But put it like this, I take your point about the All Blacks match, but everything else, I'm absolutely convinced they can't go too close to Christmas. They want to get some impetus off of the budget. Put it like this, there's more impetus off of that than anything else that happens in the calendar.
Yeah, and I'm still here trying to book hotels and flights and studio space to do the
last
word.
As I say to my daughter, it's not all about you.
Early November. Just one other thing in relation to Michael McGrath. Sorry, I still want to go to the US election, but I won't be going to the US election if we're having an Irish election the same week. Michael McGrath.
Can I just say on that, I did a bit of work for EY, and one of the smartest people I rate, I said, what should Ivan know? He said two things. Goldman Sachs are now saying in the 8 swing states, Trump is leading, and they're calling it already for Trump. And the second thing is about AI. There's some Microsoft co-pilot, and once that gets traction, it'll be all generative AI. So I know nothing about either, but that's what I was told.
Okay. On the first point, yes, if there was to be an election now, I suspect Trump would win. Who knows what's going to happen?
Dan
Stuart
Kenny, who bets on the Europe, said Americans only make up their mind on Labor Day, which is the 1st of October.
Yeah. In fact, Stuart actually texted me about the podcast during the week. And he said, I was right that you don't listen.
He said, is it only now that you copped on to that?
That's exactly what he said to me. So I suspect Stuart might be laughing his head off listening to you as you struggle at present to talk. There is one other thing, though, that I should bring up about Michael McGrath. when it comes to his marketability, shall we say politically, is he a charismatic enough person to lead a political party into a general election?
First of all, the job fits the person, you know, whoever before their Taoiseach becomes Taoiseach, they change and so on. So that's always the case.
Any sign of that happening with Simon Harris, the president?
Well, yeah, but to answer your question, the fact that he's in the same constituency as Micheál Martin doesn't help. The fact that, you know, he's a chartered accountant and is seen as business. But I'm just told by senior people in the party who are not members of the Oireachtas that he has the support. He's seen, excuse me, as a safe pair of hands, and he put it like this. You know, Boris had a phrase, when the herd moves, right? I just think the one thing to win a leadership contest is to get out in front. What he's now doing is getting out in front.
And could it also be that in reality, when it comes to it, there's nobody else in Fianna Fáil?
Dara would be a possibility. He would be seen as a Bertie figure, a Bertie type figure. Dublin, you know, he's got good connections, which we come on to talk about, with builders and so on. But put it like this, I think it would be seen that McGrath has more finesse.
Sorry, do you think the electorate would vote for a Fianna Fáil man who's perceived as having good connections with builders? Yeah. Have we not been down that road before?
Well, sorry, if you care about housing.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, I know you want to talk about housing, yeah. And I do feel bad, and I'm sorry, and thank you for coming in when you're actually clearly under the weather with your throat and everything like that. But you were at a property development conference this week, the Irish Home Builders Association, I think it was, and I think you've come back bustling with ideas as a result of it and inside information.
Yeah, well, first of all the top builders, Tier 1, you know, which would be Glenveagh and Cairn Homes, all the other ones, the members of the Housing Commission, Dermot O'Leary of Goodbodies were there, and the commission reports due to be published this month, Michael O'Flynn. And 2 years' work has gone into that. So, first of all, and this is all in the context of Harris and 250,000 houses by 2030. Pat Farrell was there, Marion Finnegan, who does more housing transactions than anyone else, residential for Sherry Fitzgerald, and a lot of things. But the most interesting thing I heard was the story about Clonliffe. So you'd be very familiar with Croke Park.
Sorry, the Clonliffe grounds, the former head, the Archdiocese of Dublin. I have actually walked those grounds. I have actually walked through the buildings. I did it. Did you know I wrote a book called Who Really Owns Ireland? And actually there's a chapter devoted to that particular piece of land, because I think it tells us an awful lot about the failure of what we need to do in this country.
So I'm going to tell you the story I was told on Tuesday by some senior developers, and it wasn't the people who were the first party involved. Heinz has bought this site for 100 million 4 years ago. They got planning permission eventually for 1,592 or 3 apartments. All the things that tick the boxes of high density, inner city, close to all the services, blah, blah. Apparently, one objector in Fox Rock was very upset about the religious heritage of the country being turned into an apartment block.
Correct.
Or whatever.
Despite the fact that the church and the lands were deconsecrated by the Catholic Church herself, she objected to that. She thought she knew better than the people in the Catholic Church.
So here we have all these planners in the local authority, all these planners in Bord Pleanála, all these inspectors, all the planning law about ecology, density, and all these issues and services. And then judges decide that this, you know. So what I'm really saying is this: does it defy public will and political will that these matters should actually go to court? They should be determined by planners, not like, in other words, okay, there's lots of things I would foist on people, including Ronan's 17-storey development in the Docklands, which the local authority have refused because they're running out of sites in the Docklands. And he's saying, like London, only way to go is up. And
like, you know, 17 stories isn't that tall.
So that was rejected this week. So what I'm saying to you is this, that the country has to make a decision. Will political will decide these matters? Because, you know, if you say the planning process is an independent statutory process, well, who writes the statutes? In my opinion, that first of all, so what does it say to Mr. Hines, who is the developer here?
He's dead now.
The corporate.
He died a couple of years ago.
So the point I'm making is,
I can actually give you a point here that's quite serious in this, because the cost of the construction of these apartments has gone up dramatically in the 4 years since the land was acquired, and will go up further, I can imagine, before they're actually built. As it turns out, Hines did a deal with a Dutch pension fund. It's Dutch pension money which is going to construct these and then rent out these apartments. And there has been a concerted campaign against it in the local area. Some people on the grounds of inappropriate height. And again, you actually sort of, come on, do you want to see how far set back from existing housing all these various blocks are going to be? There is an enormous amount of land up there. And you walk down from the Bishop's Palace, which is still in the Bishop's Palace, but the Clonliffe grounds beside it, and you walk down as far as the Talca River. There is a phenomenal amount of land, and there's also various landscaping that will go in place and facilities for all of the people who would rent. People who might rent, who might work down the IFSC and whatever, you still need housing. And there has been a campaign launched by people suggesting that this is going to be the squalor of the 21st century. And you have to say, do you mind getting real and looking south of this site and looking at the conditions that a lot of people actually live in Dublin's inner city, and the problems that you have with drug abuse and whatever, because there hasn't been opportunity for people, and people can complain about gentrification of areas. Please, can we try and make the whole area better for people to live in? These are not going to be the new slums of the 21st century. These are much better built, much higher standards. Even if they're mainly one-bedroom apartments, there is a market for one-bedroom apartments, and these are built to good standards and will last many, many years.
So that's the anecdotal story. In other words, how do we build 250,000? Yeah. Let's take the macro story. So Pat Farrell's organisation, the Institution of Property Investors, they did studies showing what would it cost to build 60,000 houses a year. Now, I would say this was published last December. It's 18.5 billion. So everything you multiply by five, you know, for the 5 years to get it. But this, the share of it, he made the very good point. The state is maxing out at 5.1 billion. Sorry, the main point is, who is going to fund this level of houses, 60,000 houses? But the 5.1 billion, which is the record, like it's gone up from two, but that includes a billion for HAP, which doesn't build you one new house, it just gives you a subsidy to existing living arrangements for people. So the state, in these figures, have a net 3.2 billion. Whatever way you look at this, and then you get development banks, which is the mortgage market, 4 billion. They're saying that 60% of this will have to come from international funds, as it did after the ghost estates and so on. And they had special terms. So, they can afford the 14 billion a year, which is missing, to build your 60,000 houses a year. And there's two problems with that. Is one, they can't get planning. a la Heinz, and we need to actually join up our dots and say we'll have to make a decision about that.
Well, we have a new planning bill which is due to be brought in before the summer recess.
And I have great time for Paul Hogan, the Assistant Secretary, who's the author of that bill, but a lot of people say it will not solve the problems.
Which is a real disaster when you consider that the various things like the strategic zones and everything that's been brought in over the last decade, every attempt to speed things up or to sort out planning seems to have failed.
And therefore, I'm back to this 14 billion. How will you get the 14 billion into Ireland? And the first thing they look for is an abatement of interest rates, that they would go down so that they would be able to finance this, right? And they get a return on this. But it's been made abundantly clear to me, and this isn't just about Sinn Féin, it's about the Sock Dems, it's about Labour and everyone. If there is a situation where they, from a regulatory perspective, cannot manage their asset through a rent cap and a no-fault eviction ban, because you know that's how you actually get over the rent cap, you change the tenancy and then you start a new rent, and if you do those things, they will kiss goodbye to Ireland. And so therefore, if you really want to solve the housing problem, you have to solve the funding problem and the planning system problem.
Okay.
And is there the political will, I'm asking, because the solutions are there.
Well, what happens when Sinn Féin is in government? Because I saw Piers Doherty was out again doing videos this week in relation to vulture funds, and we don't want... And it's... Internet, you rolled your eyes there. I hope the camera caught that for the YouTube version. You know, the use of the phrase vulture funds is very pejorative, and we dislike this. I meant the example, you know, of the Dutch pension fund, which would be funding the development of Clondiff, for example. And I'm sure people would be saying, well, why do we need Dutch pension funds? Why don't we have Irish pension funds doing it if we were going to have build to rent and a certain amount of build to rent? But the thing is, actually, is pension funds have to diversify all over the world. Irish pension funds are not allowed to put all their money into Irish assets. They have to put about 98% of it overseas for safety reasons, for diversification. That's just the way the modern world works. And unless Sinn Féin thinks it's going to change international pension fund arrangements, well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. So do they think the state is going to fund all of this? Where is the state going to get all the money to fund all of this?
First of all, on the viability question, there are two programs called Croí Cónaithe and STAR where they can actually subsidise them. And Croí Cónaithe is a good scheme, but it only has 5 projects. It hasn't got the traction. So that radically needs to be changed. But the situation is that, if the regulatory environment is such that they can't manage the asset, they won't come in here. Now, the state, in fairness, the Land Development Agency, they built 1,000 houses last year. They're hoping to get up to 2,500 houses with their land bank. But they do what's called Project Tussig. They go to a developer and do an arrangement. And the issue is who'll own the houses. But so the other point that came out from Dermot O'Leary was that if you take out the tier one builders, which are Glenveagh and Cairn Homes, the next category of about maybe 30 builders are still suffering from the legacy of the crash, and they don't have the equity. So say you have a ratio of 35% equity to them going to the bank and say, we're going to build this housing scheme, it's 65%. They don't have enough equity. So ISIF has been mentioned in this context.
It's Irish Strategic Investment Fund.
So therefore, they could invest in developers and bring it to that level. But the truth of it is that I'm really getting fed up with politicians going to a podium and talking about numbers of houses. And when you actually drill down into the Johnny Ronans and the Heinzes and all the solutions that are there, you know, the nitty gritty of it, the politicians are not backing up their words with deeds.
And can I suggest that the idea that the state can step in and do it all is utterly naive? And I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, so excuse me if I have. But the Land Development Agency, although John Coleman, its chief executive, I think is an exceptionally well-intentioned individual, the business is going now for 5 years and it's delivered a minimum number of houses. I mean, if it was a private sector developer, its shareholders would be absolutely going berserk about how few houses. Also, it has to subcontract the construction to the private sector of the various houses. It too has run into enormous planning difficulties. The Central Mental Hospital in Dundrum is one example, which is a sort of a south side version of what's happening over it in Clonliff on the north side of the city. But this idea that we could suddenly have some sort of state building firm that will do all the houses, as some politicians have put across, is absolute nonsense. It's ideologically driven and it is not living in the real world as to how things actually get done.
So I really think we need to have an adult conversation about the funding and about the planning. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think the courts were going to have to be taken out of this process and just leave it to planners.
But you see, you know what's going to happen? You say about having an adult conversation. I'm sure already there will be people listening to this jumping up and down and saying, ah, you're just in the pockets of the developers. The developers broke the country.
Who else is going to build houses? But
the point is,
this guy's in hard hats.
It's an awful lot of conversation just gets knocked down with sort of false flag arguments to a certain extent these days. I mean, I just take very briefly another thing that's been going on this week is the government again is talking about removing the so-called triple lock in relation to where we send our armed forces on peacekeeping duties. Now, not that we have many soldiers or sailors that we can send on peacekeeping duties because the defence forces have been so degraded. We actually haven't gone on a new mission since 2014 because part of the triple lock requires us, the UN Security Council has to have agreement for a peacekeeping mission. And because of the actions of Russia and China, there has been no, since 2014, there has been no peacekeeping missions. And yet, when the government is trying to address that issue by saying we need to get rid of this element of it, rather than allowing effectively Russia and China to decide our sovereignty, you get people jumping up and down on the left saying, oh, this is an attempt to get rid of our neutrality. No, it isn't. But immediately they rush for the neutrality button and they press that. And when you start talking about maybe joining NATO or anything like that, even if that's not what has been suggested, that'll be brought up to try and change the argument so that we don't have an adult conversation about the real issue. And this happens in so many things across Irish politics.
So these parties who are promising a rent freeze and a no-fault eviction ban, I totally understand that there are more renters than there are landlords and that younger voters, generation whatever, are renters. And I understand the politics of that. But what I'm saying is this, in solving the symptoms of the problem, which is rocketing rents and unaffordable rents and people have been, you know, can't pay, faced with eviction, you're actually just dealing with the symptoms. 220,000 landlords have left, units have left the market. Another 40,000 are getting out. Houses that are being sold at the moment are landlords fleeing the situation. Who is going to be the landlord?
You know, this is also an international phenomenon. We behave here in Ireland a lot of the time as if these things only happen in Ireland and we're unable to deal with them. This is happening in Britain. It's happening all across Western Europe. It's happening in Australia. Rents are rocketing. There is a shortage of accommodation being built. It's a glow. But it's
so Mr. Federico Lazzari is at the conference and he represents 20 CIFs across Europe, Build Europe. And he was exactly saying that statistically, France and Germany are actually worse than Ireland in terms of insufficient houses.
And yet there was a really interesting survey this week from the National Youth Council of Ireland, which I think in some respects plays to what you've been saying, that the election may be dictated by the anger of the under 40s. This particular survey looked at people between 18 and 30, and there seemed to be almost a degree of despondency, a large number of them thinking that they wouldn't be able to enjoy the lifestyle that their parents have lived before.
And now, thinking of leaving Ireland.
Now, you know, there's different ways of looking at that as well. I mean, sometimes, you know, maybe leaving Ireland for a while, even permanently, might be better for people, that it actually suits their psyche or
but,
whatever.
But we've put a fortune into their education.
Yeah, but and they'll get the benefit of it now, yeah.
Yeah.
Why, you're not going to start telling me now you think that somebody who qualifies as a nurse or a teacher
should
or
pay a student loan like they do in the UK?
Yeah.
No,
I'm not going to suggest that.
No, I'm not suggesting
God,
that.
No.
But what I'm suggesting is that, you know, taking the reality of the people that are flocking to come here and the people that are leaving here and how we've invested in those who are leaving, it's a very difficult situation. But put it like this, I think this conversation has attempted to deal with the realities of funding and planning, systemic issues. And I really think the politicians all stand guilty of only giving a superficial analysis of the housing supply issue.
Your voice has recovered a little bit, but you're a bit more subdued than you normally are. So I'm not going to keep you here much longer, Ivan. We'll have a shorter than normal path to Barr this week. But I would be interested just briefly to get your views on a couple of things that came up politically during the week. One of them I was fascinated by, and I wondered, do people appreciate something that's given to them for nothing? And this is the issue of the free school dinners, or hot meals for everyone in primary schools. Heather Humphreys, I spoke to on Monday about this, a big announcement, massive expansion of the scheme, which actually on the face of it looks really, really good idea. That if you, there's a lot of children who come to school who are not fed a proper breakfast, and it interferes with their ability to learn, and it can be disruptive to the performance in the class. And a lot of teachers will say that if you have a fed child, you have a better child in the school classroom. And if you have a situation where, you know, parents can't afford to feed the children, whatever, at least you look after that. But then you look at the wider issue in relation to that. And there's a number of them. And I got some really interesting text messages into the last word from both teachers and parents about this and stuff. And they were going, okay, it's great in theory. And yes, for maybe those who come from disadvantaged areas. But do you really need to give it to all children, irrespective? Because there's an awful lot of children who have a good breakfast before they come in the morning and have a good packed lunch. So why are you spending money on giving it to them? Because what actually happens is apparently a phenomenal amount of food waste. That the food that is brought into the school literally gets thrown in the bin by the kids.
Is it not focused on Daish schools?
It was, but it's now been extended to all schools. Well, all schools can apply to join it. There's an enormous amount of additional schools in the current iteration. But that's my thing, you know, should you just keep it to Daish schools? Then the issue is, even within Daish schools, there are some parents who are providing the lunch, there are others who aren't. Do you deprive children outside of Daish schools who might be in need of this? It's very difficult, but you gotta wonder as to whether you actually.
So what are you advocating?
I'm not advocating, I'm just sort of wondering as to, do you actually get the benefit out of it? That it might sound good, motherhood and apple pie, that you're doing something, but it doesn't necessarily always work out. I mean, another example, apparently in many schools, the junior infants classes are getting the same portions as the kids in sixth class because there's no discernment. Also, a lot of the food, apparently, it might be hot, but is giving chicken goujons and curry chips to kids.
Sounds delicious.
It sounds delicious, but is it nutritional, Ivan? So I'm just wondering, does the government think it's going to win votes by providing like that? Or would it be just better giving more money people in social welfare and letting them decide?
Some people say the best way to deal with poverty is actually to give them cash.
Yeah, rather than actually trying to intervene.
And all the cost of administering schemes and so on.
Stuff. Well, there may be a small number that you have to have interventions for. The other one that really jumped out at me this week, and traffic lights and road safety. Road safety is a big issue for many people, but I wonder how it is because how big it is. Because no sooner do you actually suggest slowing down traffic than people are up in arms. They don't want the speed limits reduced, even if you're told it will contribute to greater road safety. It's almost like people believe that they're never going to be involved in a crash. It's going to be somebody else. They're safe drivers, so the rules shouldn't be imposed upon them. Which is the same way that you could, for example, I think there's only two places in the country. The Port Tunnel is one, and maybe the M7 is the other portion of it, where you have average speed cameras, where you're tracked between where you actually enter the speed zone and exit the speed zone. And if you're over the average, you get a fine. There's only two places in the country that actually that happens. Surely that could happen way more often and get around the issue of not having enough Gardaí patrols out on our roads. And then you have the issue of traffic lights, right, in city centres. And that apparently it is not difficult to do. In fact, it was first done a decade ago. You put cameras on the traffic lights, which can identify the license registrations of the cars. And if they break a red light, automatic fine, whatever. An experiment was done and was shown to work and then it was never implemented on a wider basis. So we're talking about putting extra Gardaí out in traffic duties when surely technology could actually do it for us.
Well, that would be another thing that will never be implemented. You know, this 30 minutes that every cop has got to do on traffic. Yeah. I mean, where they dreamt that up as a knee-jerk reaction. It's very interesting. You know, I did tell you that Simon made a mistake in not getting rid of Helen McEntee. All the focus of the rank and file Gardaí against Drew Harris, that contagion has spilled onto her. She's not going to the conference. Oh my God, what bad politics that is, if you're looking for law and order.
If you have 98% of the GRA against Drew Harris and she makes a stand on his behalf, is that Don Quixote-style politics?
And there'll be some civil servants in justice telling her to do that.
Okay, you know. But why don't we use technology to actually...
Because you see, I've driven thousands of miles this way, and you go into a village and it gives you a printout of your figure. You're doing 48 or whatever, and says slow down. So they have the technology to tell you exactly what you're doing.
But if you're speeding coming into it, why aren't you immediately getting the... Because people don't want it. Because no sooner do you put in what people like call speed traps, and people complain it's only a revenue raising exercise, that it's not really designed to help safety.
Yeah, what did you learn today from the episode? I've told you who the next Fianna Fáil leader is going to be, and I've told you that we will not build 250,000 houses because the money and the planning can't do it.
I'll tell you what I've learned from today. It's much easier to get a word in when you're suffering from laryngitis. That's what I've learned. And hopefully Ivan will be restored.
I don't think you needed in my sickness to know that.
Ivan hopefully will be restored to full health next week. So don't forget as well, if you want to get in touch with us, that there's a way of doing so via email, and it is mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. So you can tell us what you think, give us ideas for things you'd like us to discuss as we head into a very busy period in the run-up to the European and local elections, and the Limerick mayoral election as well for people down there.
Don't pay a deposit on your flights and your hotel rooms in New York or wherever you're headed in November.
Okay, so that is all for today. Don't forget Apple, Spotify, YouTube, all the various places where you can get this podcast. Please recommend to a friend. The numbers keep going up every week of people who are joining us, and thank you for that. But Ivan discovered this week there's a lot of people who didn't even know about the podcast, and he's upset. He wants more people to be listening to him when his voice is restored fully. So until the next time, from me, Matt Cooper.
And from me, Ivan Yates.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.